Side 2, Tape 1, continued. From City Politics.
Yeah, I started this Americans for Energy Independence. The purpose of the organization actually was, this was, I became interested in the energy problem. This was actually prior to the embargo, the oil embargo, and then I became very actively involved subsequent to the oil embargo, and the objective, of course, was to, my objective, was to do something which would sensitize people in this country to the role of the Arabs in this whole thing, and also basically because I was interested in, I'm a Zionist, and I wanted to, as I said, sensitize people to the role of the Arabs and create a much more a much better attitude for Israel. The organization was a national organization headquartered in Washington. I had the support, I got the support of a number of corporations, and I arranged for Hans Bethe, who was a Nobel Prize winner, to, was at Cornell, to be the chairman of the organization, and there were many other very prominent figures. The first president actually was Chubb Peabody, who was originally governor of Massachusetts. We put out a lot of literature, and we did a number of things to try to sensitize. Among the things that I did was we set up a conservation program here in the Jewish community, but also in Allegheny County. And we got Richard Simmons of the who was the chairman of the Allegheny Ludlam to chair the effort here in Allegheny County. I also arranged during that time to, I wanted the support of Jewish organizations, so I arranged for a trip which lasted a week. We flew to various energy sources, and I got presidents of the major Jewish organizations to go on that trip. And we went to various facilities, primarily nuclear facilities, because it was my feeling at that time that nuclear reactors were really an important part of our energy supply. And there was, of course, a great deal of opposition to nuclear reactors, mainly because of ignorance. And so the objective of this whole thing was to arrange for people to get a better understanding of the whole picture of nuclear operations. So we started here in Pittsburgh, actually, and then we flew to Chicago, and we flew to Idaho, and we flew to Los Alamos. We visited nuclear plants, and we visited government nuclear installations to show what was being done, how things were being done, and we talked about the safety and tried to answer the questions that people had with regard to nuclear energy. Well, I was also saying that what we did is we promoted other forms of energy as well. We wanted to make sure that this country became less dependent upon oil and adopted other forms of energy generation rather than just be totally dependent upon oil. Of course, we're still very much dependent upon oil, and the more than 50% of our oil is coming from overseas, and most of that is coming from the Arab countries, and that's why, from a political point of view, our country acts the way it does, our national government acts the way it does. And this was something I was hoping that we would be able to mitigate to a degree. We promoted, for example, offshore oil drilling and other things, but to do it in a safe manner. I think it's still very bad that our country is so dependent upon foreign oil for its energy resources. And to be pushed around by a few Middle East countries, I think is not very pleasant. Well, anyway, from a standpoint of civic activities, this is what we did. As a matter of fact, we had a conference that we put together, at which at that time Vice President Rockefeller was participated in as well.
When was that?
This was probably in around 78, 9, something like that.
Do you see any movement toward a stand in this country to develop areas of energy so that we will not be so dependent on Middle East oil?
No. Of course, when Carter was president, he started a push in that direction, but then when he was replaced, that whole effort was completely obliterated. And as a matter of fact, I think we've become much more dependent on foreign energy sources than we've ever been. And there doesn't seem to be very much effort at this time to have alternative sources. We were pushing for synthetic gas and oil and things of that sort, and Carter started that program, but that's been killed since that time. And it seems, well, even the nuclear program is essentially dead in this country, although I feel that it's still a very important thing. I think it was a God-given resource which mankind doesn't recognize the importance of and has essentially discarded, except other countries. Other countries realize what the importance is and are continuing to develop it. Of course, everything has to be done, no matter what you do, it has to be done safely and under good control. Anything that one does that entails any danger, obviously, can cause problems. But things can be done in a safe way, and they can be done in an unsafe way, and the important thing is to have appropriate control. Unfortunately, I think the industry here in the United States and the utilities were probably most responsible for the demise of the nuclear industry. They themselves sowed the seeds of the present situation.
Can't hit their pocketbooks.
I'm sorry?
You can't hit their pocketbooks.
I think we suffer here in the world, and in the United States, and particularly to the more syndrome. We need more profit all the time. So by needing more profit, we have to cut safety, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's what happened in the case of the nuclear industry to a large degree.
think that this Korean crisis is based on their desire for implements of war, or rather for developing energy as a source of nuclear energy?
Well, it seems, from what I've read, that it's basically implements of war. If they were interested in energy, they would not be as secretive as they are. I think everything points to the fact that they are indeed developing or have developed nuclear weapons. And of course, it's an extremely dangerous thing for the world because they have no compunction about sending these things to other countries, as has been China has done it, and Korea is just another example. North Korea is just another example, I think, of what's going on in terms of weaponry. I think it's an extremely dangerous situation.
In your uptake, you devoted a great deal of time to the problem of anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And you said that your father wrote many articles.
Right.
But there was no information given about what?
My father was very concerned about Hitler's rise. Of course, prior to that time, we had many incidents of anti-Semitism, and particularly in view of the fact that I experienced them as a rabbi's son. My sister experienced them as a rabbi's daughter, and my father experienced them as a rabbi. Anti-Semitism was something we tended to live with, and as you know, in the 20s and early 30s. And with the rise of Hitler, my father was extremely concerned, and so he wrote articles about that in the newspapers, particularly in view of the fact that, I think I mentioned this previously, that New Jersey, and particularly New Brunswick, the Rutgers, was a hotbed of Nazism. And consequently, he did what he could to counteract the effort that they were making. I think I mentioned also that my sister was offered a scholarship to Germany.
That's right, and to Germany, which he turned down. What do you see as the progressive picture today in anti-Semitism?
I'm concerned. It's my impression that Jews in this country and in the world have reached the apex of the golden age of Judaism, in effect, and are now in the denouement. We're on the way down. I have the impression that anti-Semitism is increasing with the fundamentalist movement. And certainly the recession, I think, has had a tendency to exacerbate the situation. It's not, I don't think it's, And I think people are much more open in their opposition, in a more general sense. Anti-Semitism, I think, used to be based previously on more religious grounds, and now I have a feeling that it's not only religion, but also economic issues are entering into the picture, and there's a great deal of anti-Semitism again as a result of that. This business of people in prominent positions who are talking about the position of Jews in banking and in Wall Street and in the media and so on, that's all becoming much more prominent. I'm very concerned about the Farrakhan movement and the black situation here. It's amazing to me that blacks generally, who have been helped so much by Jews, have turned so much against Jews. And I think it's an unfortunate situation. I mean, it's Farrakhan's people going to, Farrakhan himself going to the colleges and talking the fact that as a result of, I think, the situation that we have now where it is felt that people should be given more freedom, and particularly the blacks who've been shut out of things previously now have to be, they're overcompensating. So, you know, here in the University of Pittsburgh, there have been all kinds of speakers who have come where it's supported in effect by the student body at large, whereas if you try to do something for a Jewish cause, you don't see very much of that. I'm very much concerned about the fact that the media are so anti-Israel, and I think that translates not only into being anti-Israel, but also anti-Semitic. I think the and whether it's television or radio or the newspapers or magazines, wherever you pick up something, the thrust is so anti-Israel, and it obviously is going to rub off on Jews in general, and it has been.
Do you think that the situation in Germany is gaining ground again?
And, unfortunately, we have the skinheads wherever. And ADL, in their surveys, has reported an increase in anti-Semitism and anti-Semitic incidents wherever, whether it's in foreign countries or here in the United States. I think we're in an endangered situation. And from a political point of view, I think it's very dangerous too, because I think there's a tendency for Jews to not want to rock the boat. And I think we see it in AIPAC now, probably, and the role that AIPAC is taking, and the fact that it is trying to have a lower profile, and Jews in general are trying to, I think, maintain a lower profile from a political point of view. And I'm afraid also that what's happened is that we become much more fragmented, and consequently we don't have the clout that we used to have. We're fragmented from a population point of view. People are moving around. You know, there are no longer concentrations, as large concentrations as we had of Jews, and therefore the ability to elect officials has been diluted. I think I've expounded sufficiently on that particular subject.
Do you think that intermarriage has created a serious problem in this aspect of Jewish life?
I think intermarriage has created a serious problem in terms of Judaism as such, particularly in this country. Whether intermarriage has created a problem with regard to anti-Semitism, I really don't. I really haven't thought about it in those terms. But I do think that Judaism in this country has tended to become very polarized. You have, on the one hand, those who are very religious, fundamentalist, and those on the other side who are more liberal, very liberal, although I must say that conservatism and the reform movement tended to move toward a more orthodox tendency. Which I think is good in terms of the future of Judaism. I think our problem insofar as Judaism in this country is concerned is because there's lack of education. I don't think our children appreciate their religion because they haven't been trained adequately in it. I don't think that they're able, when they go to college, to counteract the negative influences as a result of it. And they tend to drift away from religion. On the other hand, you have a tendency now for more adult education. Certainly here in Pittsburgh it's been demonstrated. Whereas people who have drifted away suddenly decide that maybe it's time that they discovered their roots and learn more about their religion. So you have people who are really extremely irreligious, very reformed in their attitudes, who have now decided that they want to learn more. And there are a number of examples here in Pittsburgh that you can see, where people have come from very reformed or conservative families and have become very religious.
Do you see any tendency of the extremely reformed opposing the infusion of more traditional things in their lives?
I haven't seen that, no. I think for the older generation it's been quite the opposite. I think there's been more of a tendency to try to learn more. Maybe it's because as there's more of an anti-Semitic movement in the country, there's a tendency to circle the wagons.
The old saying, when it's bad for Judaism, it's good for the Jews. When it's good for Judaism, it's bad for the Jews.
Maybe that's true.
This question.
Yeah.
All right. Talking about the fundamentalists in this country, there is a tremendous influence in this country by Rabbi Schneerson. And it has spilled over into Israel. They do not accept Israel as we do.
I disagree with that statement, but go ahead.
Where can we go?
No. First of all, I think you have to understand that there is a difference between Schneerson on the one hand and the Satmar rabbi, whose name escapes me, Finkelstein or something like that. I've forgotten what it is. The Satmar sect on the other. Now, the Satmar sect believe that Israel cannot be established except on a religious ground by having the Mashiach come and reestablish the country. That's not the attitude of the Lubavitch at all. The Lubavitch take the attitude that Israel is very important and want to preserve it. Is that what you had in? Is that the influence that you were talking about?
No. Yes, I am talking about. I think he is in this country now.
Schneerson is. Yeah.
No. I know.
The Satmar man is in.
Somebody from that sect is in this country. It was in the paper this morning.
The Satmar rabbi has never accepted Israel.
Yeah.
Okay. The Israeli government, per se. Their principal area of operation is New York City. He went to Israel recently. The rabbi went to Israel recently. And incidentally, Arafat has indicated that he has the support of that. You know, Israel is not for Jews, it's for the Muslims. And he's got the support of the Satmar. That, I think, is wrong. But in any case, the Satmar sect feel that it's only through Mashiach that Israel can be established. And therefore, anything that's secular at this particular point is totally rejected. That is not the attitude of Schneerson. Look, for all the criticisms that one can level against Lubavitch, they have done a tremendous amount of good in terms of Judaism in the world in general. They have a world organization, and they've established schools, they've established assistance programs, not only in Israel as well, whereas the Satmar would never do a thing like that. So you have to differentiate between the two. Schneerson is not your man. Schneerson is the head of the Lubavitch movement. And the other rabbi, as I say, whose name escapes me, is the head of the...
This morning's paper, and I forgot.
Yeah. No, but you have to differentiate completely.
But Schneerson has been politically effective in Israel.
Schneerson has been politically effective in Israel, that's true. Because they've taken a generally an activist role Judaism throughout the world, and Israel certainly, there one can argue whether or not his role has been good or bad.
That's the question I'm asking.
Well, I don't know specifically about his role, but I am very much concerned about what the government of Israel today is doing. I feel there was a talk here by Douglas Feith, who used to be in the National Security Council and in the Defense Department of the Reagan administration. He gave a talk here to the Zionist annual meeting a couple of weeks back, and it was his feeling that this present government in Israel is totally deluding itself with regard to the peace process. And I feel that way too. I think they're making a huge mistake. They are deluding themselves. So.
End of side two, tape one, to be continued on tape two.
Nayerson's role, if I knew precisely what he was doing in Israel, maybe I could answer that better.